Prepare for a Gopher football knowledge bomb. This is the FBT podcast with hosts MV.
That's pretty damn good. I like it. That's pretty good.
It's that time again, folks. FBT Podcast. This is your host, MB. Along with me again for the ride is Frothy Gopher.
What up? Round two.
Damage Mind is back for another trip, and we are going to be talking about the Big Ten. So going through the Big Ten, what do you think your impressions are of some of the teams in the conference this year? Let's do a little wraparound and then see what the Gopher chances are against some of the other teams in the conference, starting with Iowa.
Oh, so we start with Iowa. Yeah. They lost some defensive line players, but they reload really well there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something that they're particularly good at. So I don't really know any of the players on the defensive line at Iowa, but they're pretty good. So I'm sure they'll be back. They've got Vandenberg there. I think they've got a good chance. I was pretty typically in, 8-win team, so that's kind of where I see them shaking out this year.
Iowa has an 80,000 seat stadium that they fill up all the time, so that just gives them a huge advantage over Minnesota, in terms of program revenue. So, it's pretty tough for Minnesota to compete against Iowa, given that, Iowa makes a lot more money than they do. Another thing you got to keep in mind, too, is that, they did lose three starters on the offensive line, but like you said, Iowa typically reloads, and I think that Kirk Ferentz, despite the fact that he's paid pretty well, he recruits really, really well, to Iowa. He always manages to get these guys, and he managed to steal a couple guys from Illinois, from Chicagoland area and Minnesota as well. So I think I think they're going to be about an 8-9 win team this year.
And there's always the chance they have that special season.
Of course.
Their big 11-win seasons have really kind of come out of nowhere.
Yep.
I see this as a potential for this year as well.
Yep. Iowa is one of those teams that whenever you start downing him, that's when Kirk Ferentz does his absolute best work. Best work. Moving on to the other most hated rival team, Wisconsin. What do you see about Wisconsin this year?
Well, they got that Moneyball guy. I think he's going to be all the talk for the Heisman Trophy this year. I was a little upset to see all the negative press that came out that he may have started that fight. I think that was ridiculous. But he got jumped in the street by some thugs, and all of a sudden they were trying to tag the football program with all that. So I think, that's the media trying to make something out of nothing for a really respectable program there.
Yeah.
I think in their division in the Big Ten, there's not a lot there. Ohio State, Penn State, both out of the picture. So I think Wisconsin, it's a pretty clear path to the Big Ten championship game. And I think they're loaded for bear this year. Again, they lose some offensive linemen. I think they had two get drafted into the pros, but it's a factory over there. Brett Bielema knows exactly what he's doing. I can't really name any of those guys, but they're just good at what they do. And quite frankly, they're loaded with Minnesota talent. Minnesota's their recruiting. Minnesota's treated like home state recruiting, I think, is what Bert said. And they've got a few Minnesota guys over there, and they're going to win with our players.
Absolutely right. And Camp Randall Stadium. Camp Randall is absolutely the best atmosphere in the entire Big Ten. There's really no question about it. The students have so much enthusiasm and energy with their jump around chants, and they're really innovative with some of the crouchers they do, the slow motion wave. Just really, really ahead of its time. It's really great for a program that's really only started in 1993. I'm amazed that they were able to get to the point where they're at right now, where they're basically the number one team in the Big Ten leaders division. There's really no challenging them. Can anybody challenge them? I mean, they're awesome. I mean, add the fact that they have an 85,000 seat stadium that they sell out every single game. They've got tons of program revenue. They are on the ascendancy, and it's just going to be really tough for Minnesota to beat them. And think about this too. Minnesota is, you know, Minnesota on Scout.com's rankings. I mean, they are at the bottom, absolute bottom of the rankings, and Scout by far is the best at these things. So you know what? Kill's recruiting class, no matter how much he talks about it, it's not good because Scout said it wasn't good. And of course, we all know that Scout is the best.
What's amazing to me, though, is that they are, you know, they have what 20,000 capacity student section there at Camp Randall, and at kickoff every single game, the students are just sitting there ready to roll. It's crazy to me how they do that. I wish we could recreate that same atmosphere here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just something that Minnesota should aspire to. It's going to be a challenge. I don't think it's ever going to happen, you know, with the, given the malaise of the student body here and the general lack of enthusiasm regarding a Gopher football program. You know, hats off to Jerry Gill. He's got a difficult journey ahead of him if he's going to be able to make this team into a winner. And with that, I would say that, you know, I really want to thank you, Froth the Gopher, for appearing on the program, and then, you know, for coming on here. I want to award you a silver certificate to Murray Steakhouse for a butter knife steak.
It's beautiful. Thanks, MV. I appreciate that.
All right. If you couldn't tell, that was not a serious take. That was our hot sprout steaks from the big. We're going to actually move on to some real talk about the Big Ten and what we think about them rather than just, you know, drive-by takes. I probably shouldn't have been as frontal with it as I was, but, you know, whatever. We're here having fun.
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot to take issue with. I mean, I think you've written about it in the blog, and I've gone on tirades about Brian Bennett's takes, and I know that you're on the blog roll there, so I'll minimize my evisceration of Mr. Bennett, but it's not unusual for him to have some of the laziest takes around. I spent some time taking a look at his work this week, and, you know, he's there to kind of provide coverage across the whole Big Ten, and he's only good at it at the thinnest of levels. He doesn't really have any deep understanding of any of the teams. He tends to jump on the hype and, you know, ride the Wisconsin, Michigan, Michigan State trains about as hard as they can be ridden. And I think that's fair. You know, they're the programs that are making the news today. But at the same time, if you don't really know very much about the league and you don't really know very much about the players, maybe it's best that you stay away from ranking individual units or even worse, individual players. The fact that he left Stoudemire completely without mention on the Big Ten's specialists unit this week, when he's the all-time, you know, leading kick returner in the Big Ten, he's a fifth-year senior. He's pretty close, I believe, to the NCAA record.
Yeah, he's scheduled to break this. If he goes at his current career average for kickoff returns, he should break that Carter guy from Houston's record about middle of October or so. And that's provided that he actually has a lot of kicks to return due to the change in NCAA kickoff rules where they moved everything up 5 yards. There was actually a pretty good article, on the Star Tribune from Team Beard, where Stoudemire talks about the fact that, you know what, Sauvel's given him the green light. And if he's moving forward within his momentum and he's not moving backward, he's going to bring it out. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's 5 yards or 7 yards deep. As long as he's moving forward, his momentum is going to carry him and he's going to take it out. And you know what? I honestly don't know from an opposing special teams coordinator perspective who you're going to kick it to. I mean, one option is to kick it to the Big Ten's all-time leading kickoff return yardage guy, Troy Stoudemire.
Oh, Stoudemire, that's
right. Stoudemire, I still mess that up quite frequently, and have him potentially bring it out to the 50 almost every time. Or you kick it off to another guy, Marcus Jones, who's already proven that he can take it out to the house twice last year, only one of which would counted, and he's apparently even faster and quicker than he was last year. So it's really, neither of those are good options for an opposing kickoff court, you know, special teams coordinator. I think I might just instruct my punter or my kicker to kick it out of bounds every single time if he doesn't have the leg.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how many of the kicks actually go through the end zone. I think that has the possibility to really change the game if the rules weren't already changing the game enough. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, if whether the kick return game is anywhere near as close to dynamic as it has been over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, this is one of those things where I think they tried a little bit too hard, you know, maybe overthink it. I mean, I know that they have the statistics saying that, you know, almost all the injuries and concussions occur to do with these high velocity impact that occur on special teams, that you could drastically reduce them if you eliminate the amount of kicks that are returned. But I still think you're going to get guys like Stoudemire and Jones who are pretty cavalier about it and recognize that they have a potential to change the game. And are going to try and bring it out every time. And, you know, this isn't like the NFL where everybody's got a, you know, Janikowski-like leg and they can boot it, you know, through the uprights and in the first row of the stands. I mean, some of these guys can barely hit the can barely get 5 yards to the end zone in college. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting. Going to be a good barometer in terms of strategy of this coaching staff.
Yep, agree completely. But anyway, just to finish up on the Bennett take on Stoudemire, the fact that he gives the benefit of the doubt to many, many programs about, I don't really know who the players are that are going to be replacing, you know, the offensive, defensive linemen, the linebackers that left. I don't really know anything about them, but they've got a good history of producing these sorts of folks, so we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. How do you not give the benefit of the doubt to the Big Ten's all-time leading kick returner? You know, and I think his defense was something along the lines of, well, he wasn't that great in the 8 returns he had last year, averaging only 21.5 yards a return, and it wouldn't have put him in the top half of the Big Ten. Well, you're going to use 8 returns from last year as your single set of data to refute maybe, you know, 3 years prior where he was in the 24, 25, 26 returns per game. You know, quite frankly, the Big Ten all-time record for kick returners is a bit of a dubious record to have on its own. All it really says is that we're kicked off to a lot, which means we give up a lot of points. That notwithstanding that, it's just very, very inconsistent and pretty emblematic of the sort of coverage that he's been giving the Gophers since he came on board the Big Ten.
Well, one thing I will point out is that it's not even just yardage that Stoudemire has produced a lot of. It's average too. So if you go by just his kickoff return average in the 3 seasons which he wasn't injured, he finished 1st, 4th, and 3rd in the conference in kickoff return average. So I mean, it's not as if he's just pumping up his stats by the fact that he returns a lot of kicks. Now, granted, because he has a greater sample size than a lot of other kick returners, he has the higher probability of returning one longer. But still, the fact remains, he does return a lot of kicks for a really high amount of yardage, and he's been doing this consistently over his career. And to simply throw all that aside, saying, "Oh, well, he didn't have a good year last year, so I'm taking a wait and see approach with him." Well, I mean, what the hell are you doing here, dude? I mean, so you're not going to give somebody who your own colleague ranked as the number one kickoff returner back in 2010 and in 2011 when he was doing these previews, you're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt since you took over the keys to this vehicle for preseason coverage, and you're going to say that one stat from an injury shortened year is going to determine it, whether or not he's ranked. I mean, again, these are preseason rankings. We shouldn't get that upset about them, but I think it's just ludicrous. And again, like you said, it's emblematic of the type of coverage that he gives teams that just aren't on the front burner of the Big Ten. And even frankly, some of those front burner teams, they are overexposed in the amount of coverage they get from Worldwide Leader Blog. I mean, Wisconsin. If you look at Wisconsin, all the narratives are surrounding Wisconsin football this offseason should be on the incredible amount of turmoil that's happened in that program. Yeah, they went to 2 consecutive Rose Bowls, but they're replacing their entire staff. The brains behind that offensive operation is gone. Their offensive line coach is gone. Their tight end coach is gone. They've completely cycled over their staff twice since the time that Burt has been in Madison. And yet, somehow, it's not an issue. And the guy that they hired to replace the offense, Matt Canada, doesn't exactly have the greatest history of lighting the Big Ten on fire when he was at Indiana. I think he was also an assistant at Northwestern. Yeah, granted, he looked great last year in Northern Illinois, but he also had Chandler freaking Harnish.
Yeah.
We know who built Chandler Harnish up, okay? So are we going to give Matt Canada credit for building Chandler Harnish up, but we're not also going to give Matt Limegrover credit for that? I mean, come on. It's the same thing with him when he goes to Madison. Is he going to look like a genius because his offensive line is going to be able to, you know, block 5 yards downfield for Monty Ball? I mean, that's the type of questions that I think are absurd. And additionally, from stuff coming out of Madison, talk about, you know, quarterback controversy. They don't know who their starting quarterback is going to be. There are reports out of there from DiNardo and the Big Ten Network that Joel Stave, or however you pronounce it, Stove, is the best-looking quarterback out there. He's a redshirt freshman. Danny O'Brien was supposed to be the rental quarterback that they're going to have for 2 years, that Bielema can just ride this wave out, you know, and just continuously keep striking while the iron is hot. And the fact that he may not even start should be emblematic of something. I mean, it should be indicative that there may be some issues there. I mean, Kurt Phillips could be the starting quarterback. The guy has had 3 ACL tears in the same knee in a 4-year span. Maybe he's healthy now, but I would not be comfortable if I were a Badger fan, knowing that the keys to the most important position in that offense, even if all you're doing is handing the ball off and throwing play-action passes to your tight end, is on 3 really big question mark guys, that would concern me.
Yeah, I agree. Wisconsin's an interesting case because they are, you know, a very sexy team. They're, you know, as frustrating as it is, they, you know, they are they've been very, very good since they started their program 20 years ago. I thought it was really interesting, you touched on this a little bit just a second ago, was the comments that came out of DiNardo when the Big Ten was making their way through Wisconsin on their visit to every Big Ten city. And he mentioned complacency a few times. I think maybe you blogged about this a little bit too. I thought that was really, really interesting. And, you know, I hesitate to read too much into it because, you know, if they were to get smacked by a meteor or get swallowed up in some sort of Bane machination, you know, it'd be a beautiful thing as far as I was concerned. So I try not to read too much into it. But at the same time, you've got someone who, in DiNardo, who is generally provided some pretty favorable coverage of every team in the Big Ten. I mean, he had some glowing praise for us, and I'm not sure whether it's legitimate or whether he's just blowing sunshine up our asses. But there were a string of tweets where DiNardo really came out and said that complacency is a concern for Wisconsin. The coaches are talking about it. The players are talking about it. And whether it's just something that says, okay, we've made it to this level where we're, you know, consistently a top 5 team in the Big Ten, what do we need to do to get to an Ohio State or Michigan level? And it's maybe the complacency is the buzzword that they're going with. But at the same time, with, to your point, the entire new set of coaches there, with a new quarterback, you know, you lose Russell Wilson, who was simply amazing last year. You lose Russell Wilson, and with the uncertainty around the quarterback, with filling in some spots on the offensive line, you lose a few key defensive players. There are some questions there that really aren't being addressed, and I think you made that point as well. So what does that mean? You know, again, Wisconsin really has a pretty simple path to the Big Ten championship game, given the fact that Ohio State and Penn State are not going to be factors in the postseason this year. So that certainly changes things a little bit. You know, they could realistically get into the title game with, you know, 3 or 4 losses, excuse me. So it changes the equation, and I understand that, but I don't think that necessarily should give a free pass to all of the uncertainty that does exist in the program. And while I still think they're going to have a pretty good year, because it's tough not to with, you know, the horses on the offensive line that they do keep, and having Monty Ball as your running back, I certainly think that they're nowhere near as well situated as they were going in the last year, when you had an absolutely studly offensive line, Monty Ball, and the revelation that was Russell Wilson.
I completely agree with that. Even on the offensive line, let's think about this for a second. Back in 2010, when they made their when Burt made his first Rose Bowl run, every single member of that offensive line was an All-American, when you think about it, or a potential All-American, and is probably going to get drafted in the NFL. Karimi, Moffitt, Kahns, I believe it was, what, Frederick? Frederick was the other guy? I can't remember. Whatever cheat, you know, that they have on that team that just roids up. And then, of course, you know, you've got Ricky Wagner, who was played right tackle that year and then switched over. I mean, the fact that they have either All-Americans at every single position in 2010, and that's basically carried them over for 2 years, that's astonishing. I mean, that simply just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen. And so to your point, when somebody makes the claim that, oh, well, they just simply reload at this position and they're a factory and we can give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, let's go back and actually look at it. I mean, you give them the benefit of the doubt because at any one time, that line back in 2010 was probably one of the best offensive lines in Big Ten history. And they've sustained a significant amount of turnover. I mean, they've lost four starters from that really amazing line back then. And the only one of them that really remains is Wagner. So,
well, they're starting two sophomores on the right side of the line, it looks like, right now. Rob Havenstein and Costigan.
Yeah. And then
if we get dinged because our offensive line is young, well, their offensive line is young too, right? So it should be applicable in the same case. So, you know, why, I guess, in, you know, it's more of a rhetorical question, I guess, than anything, but why aren't those questions being asked? Why, you know, we spend a lot of time digging into everyone else's problems. Why isn't a more critical analysis of Wisconsin, right, in order? Yeah. Is it because they are kind of an upstart program that really pushed themselves in the upper tier of the Big Ten, and we like that story? What is it about Wisconsin that sort of allows them to escape some of the analysis around the coaching turnover? Why is it that pretty much every major position coach and the coordinators left when Chris went to Pittsburgh? Is it a much greater opportunity there? Is it a chance to build something great in, you know, the Big East? It's hard for me to rationalize that. So, you know, why isn't there more of an analysis done on the change in the offensive line and the great run that they've had over the last couple of years? How do you sustain that with new talent coming in? I think it's worth exploring some of those questions that I just don't see either from the coverage in-state in Wisconsin, which I completely understand. Why would they do that unless they were sort of hack journalists like they are here in the Twin Cities, or through coverage on the worldwide leader?
I completely agree. I mean, just I'll wrap it up by saying, you know, they're starting, they're not starting, but a true freshman in Dan Volz was as a second team guard when the Big Ten Network was out there. And while they say, oh, well, that's really impressive for, you know, a freshman to crack the lineup at Wisconsin, I mean, that's another indication that, you know what, they may not have the type of depth that they've had at the position for the last couple of years. And when you combine a lack of depth and a really young offensive line that's sort of cresting downward, and your quarterback's position is completely unsettled, the wide receiver position, from all the reports, is very unsettled and needs to improve in a hurry, apparently, from all the reports that we're reading beyond Aberderis. And then you have your running back situation. So, yeah, Monty Ball is great. James White is solid. And apparently, now I can't even remember the kid's name. See, this is, again, preparation. We're awesome at it.
Who are you talking about?
Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon apparently is like the second coming, and he's the apparently the guy that looks better than Monty Ball, if you can believe that or not. I mean, these are all situations which, well, you know, they've got a lot of weapons at tailback, but are they going to go back to being, you know, 2009, 2008 level one-dimensional Wisconsin? And maybe not is going to be as dynamic and awesome as all Russell Wilson everything. And, I don't know. I mean, these are questions that I think should be asked, and they're not being asked. Now, let's move on to to the other hated rivals, Iowa Hawkeyes. I actually do think that there has been a fair amount of talk about the position changes that have gone on there, much more so than Wisconsin. I think people are being a little bit more cognizant of that. Aside from the angry Iowa running back hating God that continuously picks off Iowa's
so
running back talent
so
left
bad.
And right every single turn, I think that there really is an indication. So people knew going into this season that running back was going to be an issue, that there's going to be some differences with continuity. I know people are saying that, oh, well, it's going to look like the same Iowa program that it's always been. What that translates to me is, well, unless we have a super stud running back and a super great offensive line, which we tend to have every, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 years, this is going to be a passing team. It was a passing team last year, and even during Stansy's years, it was a passing team. There were years in which Iowa was last in the Big Ten in rushing, yet their offense was probably middle of the pack to upper in the middle of the pack, and they were winning, you know, 8 to 10 games because they were a passing team. So let's not beat around the bush and say, oh, well, Iowa's going to be a great rushing team. They're not. They're going to be a passing team. They have the Big Ten's leading passing quarterback by passing yards returning in Vandenberg. They've got a pretty good receiver in Keenan Davis, and then, you know, Fedorowicz at the tight end is going to be a weapon. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to throw the ball. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's not talk about how, oh, they're going to run the ball. Greg Davis, you know, in his awesome Texas running attack, which he had, oh yeah, Texas running game sucked. I think that there's been a little bit more talk about that, which is good. But I don't know. Maybe why don't you share your thoughts on that, Frothy?
Yeah, well, first, you know, they lost. It sounds like they lost another running back yesterday in Barkley Hill, though I haven't heard anything absolutely definite there. So it looks like going into the season, your starting Iowa running back is something called Damon Bullock, right? And I think he and the only other back on the Brad Rogers, I think, is the fullback. I think they had like 10 or 15 carries between them last year, and that's going to be your horse. Now, everyone's been talking about Greg Garmon. You know, he's a four-star kid, you know, and then he got dinged for liking the drugs too much. So, you know, I think there's some possibility there, but, you know, Garmon's a true freshman. I think they had that other kid who was arrested on drug charges earlier in the year, lost his scholarship and is a walk-on now, Malloy, I think. So, you know, there's a major, major question mark, and they were very poor rushing last year. I think they had 130, 140 yards per game, so was close to the bottom of the Big Ten, if not in the bottom. So I think you're right. They're going to be more of a passing team than they are a rushing team, so the angry Iowa running back, Kaden God, can, you know, force them to run five wide sets, you know, without a running back in the backfield, and they may be headed that way. With that said, though, you don't lose Marvin McNutt and continue to hit on all cylinders. Yeah, Keenan Davis is great. He's got good size. You know, had a pretty strong season last year. Martin Manley, I think, is their other big receiver there. So, you know, I think can one of those guys step up and fill in for a McNutt? Those are big shoes to fill. I think he had, you know, 1,300 yards receiving last year. So that's a pretty big hole to fill. And, you know, there again, I think Iowa lost some folks on the offensive line due to graduation. So I think they're rolling with a couple of sophomores and a redshirt freshman on the offensive line this year. So, yeah, a lot of questions there, particularly when you're talking about installing a new offense. So maybe they'll click on all cylinders. It's really, really tough to say, though. I think that, you know, the pieces might be in place for Iowa to have a pretty good season. But, you know, I would probably pencil them in for 7 or 8 wins at this point, simply because it's hard to see a real horse running back stepping out of the freshman ranks unless Damon Bullock is something I don't believe that he is. And with, you know, losing your stud receiver and having turnover on the offensive line, I think makes it difficult for Iowa to really have a breakout season. I really believe that they're imminently beatable by us, even down at Kinnick this year. I think it's good that we get them early in the year. I think it allows us to get them at a time when maybe they haven't gotten an established running back yet. Maybe their offensive line is still kind of working through some issues of having some new folks on there, haven't really gelled as a unit. And that, you know, they lost some players on the defensive line too. A lot of the folks that they're coming in with certainly look the part. I mean, they're big horses, but not a lot of talent. You know, you lose Mike Daniels, you lose Bins, you know, all of whom or both of whom were pretty active in the tackles and sacks categories. You're really filling in a lot of talent that is not an easy thing to do. So I think it's good we get him at the start of the year. I think it'll help us to understand where we are as a program, provided we're going into that game at 4-0 or 3-1. And I think we've got a decent shot to beat them, largely because they're really in the midst of a rebuilding year, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that take. You know, the interesting thing about Iowa's defense to me is that in a lot of ways it resembles our own. You know, the question marks of the Iowa defense are up front with the defensive line because they're all really young. and they're replacing a lot of talent that they had last year. Now, we're not replacing as much talent as Iowa had on the defensive line, but we similarly have some youth in there. And in terms of coming off the bus looking like a beast, we win that category with Rashid Hageman alone. But yeah, they're a question mark up front because they're losing a lot of guys, and the people that they're bringing back are really young. But the back half, the back seven of their defense is going to be pretty stout, I think. And similar to us, I mean, our question marks are whether or not we can stop the run. I think that's going to be less of a question mark for Iowa. And similarly, their strength is going to be in the secondary, especially at corner. And that's kind of similar to what our defense is going to be. We're going to be really strong at corner. So it's going to be kind of an interesting development to see that Iowa defense. Can that front four, you know, step up and generate pressure all by themselves? Because as we know, you know, Norm Parker didn't like to blitz at all. I think he had an aversion to blitzing completely. And Phil Parker, who I do not believe has any relation to Norm Parker, is kind of carrying on that philosophy of, you know, they're going to be really fundamentally sound and play base, you know, 4-3 cover 2 and just let the front four sort of generate pressure and be either going to be really stout up there, or that's what they're hoping. You know, they may have to blitz a little bit more than they like, whereas, you know, the Clay style, Clay doesn't give crap one way or another if his front four can generate pressure. If they can, great, but he's not going to just sit idly by and let quarterbacks just rush all over the field. I mean, he's going to be running blitzes and run blitzes all the time. So I think that's pretty interesting. I'm with you. I see Iowa as sort of a transitioning team. I don't quite know whether or not they're going to leap out this year and become like Ferentz's third win, so to speak. But they definitely, you know, the faithful down in Iowa City were definitely calling for changes to be made. You know, mm-hmm. they wanted some new style. They wanted a new philosophy on offense. I don't know. Don't necessarily think they got the style that they wanted with Greg Davis, who's basically just going to be, you know, adjudicate himself to whatever Ferentz's wishes are. And at the same time, on defense, I don't think they really cared as long as they played stout Iowa defense. And I think Phil Parker is going to, you know, go along the same lines of not really changing too much there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they lost some coaches. They've lost some personnel. They're undergoing some changes. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think that you could pencil them in for anywhere between 7 and 8 wins. Maybe they have that classic Ferentz, no one sees this coming, and they explode, kind of like that happened in 2008, where no one saw them coming. But, you know, I really doubt it. I mean, I'm not trying to disparage them by saying that, you know, I think they are beatable by us in week one of the Big Ten play. I mean, they have issues, we have issues. I mean, they're not a perfect football team. Let's just be honest about it. Neither are we, so anything can go.
I would say that there is, and maybe this will be a preposterous statement contender here, but I would say that there is as much chance for Iowa to get to 9 to 10 to 11 wins as there is for us to get to 8 or 9 wins.
Woo! Might have to make the sounder for that one.
No, I mean it though. I mean, they're, you know, I don't think that there is a chance in hell that we go 9, 10, 11 wins this year. I just do not think there's a chance at all. But I think there's an outside chance, you know, 10-20% maybe, that we can get to 8 or 9 wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the likelihood of that happening is it's as likely that Iowa is going to have a breakout season and go to the Orange Bowl again, right? There are lots and lots of question marks. Their talent level, if you buy into the offers and or stars as a proxy for talent, their talent level is a little bit above ours. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. So their upside is probably higher if you count that talent, you know, but it is a new system. Though, to your point, it isn't radically different than what it was before. But there's a lot of question marks that I think need to be answered. And consequently, I think the likelihood of them breaking into, you know, another BCS bowl is relatively low, but not out of the realm of possibility. It's in the same realm of possibility that the Gophers, you know, can finish in, you know, the top 5 of the Big Ten.
Let's talk about the top 5 of the Big Ten and the upper crust, so to speak, of the Slow States Conference. by that, I'm probably talking here about guys, teams that are on our schedule: Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska. And we've already talked enough about stupid Wisconsin, so let's not waste any more breath on that. You know, sort of an interesting year in the Big Ten in this regard, that there are a number of contenders for the title, especially in the Leaders Division, Legends Division, Big Ten West, so to speak. But all of them have flaws. All of them have big question marks. None of them are perfect teams. And starting with Michigan, you know, Michigan last year was a team that benefited disproportionately favorably from a super high fumble recovery rate on defense. They recovered 80% of defensive fumbles, which is absolutely absurd. Even returning 60% of fumbles, or even 65, is an incredibly lucky bet. That's an incredibly fortunate turn of events for any defense, but let alone one that was really, really made somewhat of a miraculous recovery from the Gerg days of 3-3-5. I mean, I know Greg Madison is a hell of a coach and a great recruiter with a long, long pedigree of producing great defenses, but I think even the Michigan fans had to be a little bit shocked at how well that he transitioned that defense from what was a complete dumpster fire to something that actually resembled something that Michigan fans could actually be proud of, even in all of their sanctimony. I don't know. I mean, they lose, again, like a lot of teams, they're losing a lot of talent up front. I mean, they're very, very young along the defensive line, and they lose an anchor in Mike Martin. Big Will Campbell, when he's not crushing cars by trying to slide across them, he's probably going to have to be the anchor, but he's relatively inexperienced, I would say, even though he's a junior. He doesn't have a ton of playing experience. He's a big hog, horse, super strong, could be a force in there. But they don't have depth. They're very thin at defensive line.
Yeah, I don't think they return more than 50 tackles in the starters for the defensive line this year, right? It may be significantly less than that. I don't know. I know it's not many. So that'll be interesting to see. But their back seven is sick. And you have got, I think, pretty much everyone returns from last year. In that back seven. I mean, you've got Demons at the Mike position there. He was up close to 100 tackles, if I recall correctly. And then you've got, you know, it's what really amounts to an all-star secondary, just with all the talent in the world. And it's probably going to be a trend for Michigan, I think, that, you know, if you look at their recruiting, and they're pretty much already – it seems like they're already filled up through 2016, but I know they're way ahead of the game for the 2013 class and are well on their way for 2014 as well. So they're going to be consistently one of the top-heavy teams with talent again. But I think their defensive back seven is going to make things easier for some of those new horses on the defensive line to come in and make an impact. Just to the extent that, you know, if you've got lockdown coverage – from your defensive backs and linebackers, and it gives your defensive line an extra second to get to the quarterback. If you've got linebackers who can know and react well to play action, it gives the defensive lineman a better opportunity to sniff things out and make the appropriate read. So I am less concerned about Michigan's defensive line than I guess maybe more concerned, since I don't want Michigan to win. I think they're going to be in good shape. It would surprise me pretty significantly if their defense didn't end up in the top half of the conference this year.
Yeah, and moving on to their offensive side of the ball, I mean, it's going to be, you know, the Denard and Fitz Toussaint show again. And, you know, I think Al Borges is a really creative, guy in terms of offensive West Coast schemes. I mean, he really does know how to produce really effective and high-quality offenses. Is it going to be, you know, a typical West Coast, you know, pass the ball, you know, 5-7 yards type offense that he's run before? No, because he can't with Denard. I mean, Denard's simply not an accurate enough quarterback to do that, but what Denard does allow you to do is to continuously put pressure on an opposing defense and to account for him at every single snap, and at any point, he could turn something, what you think is, you know, a 5-yard loss into an 80-yard touchdown. He's just that dynamic of a player. So, I mean, this is going to be, I would say, probably more run-heavy team. Denard probably will complete in the 50 to 52, maybe even up to 55% passing. It's kind of, I mean, the situation is not unlike what we have on offense.
I agree with that. I think I see Denard. I think he had about 55% last year, so I would see it being pretty consistent. But no, they're a run first team. I mean, they were 220 yards per game rushing last year versus under 200 for passing, if I recall. So they're going to be a team that is going to rely on Denard's legs. It's going to rely on Fitz Toussaint, provided he can stay out of the doghouse. I think we're going to learn a lot about Michigan, you know, kind of irrespective of whether Fitz Toussaint plays in that game against Alabama. We're going to learn an awful lot about Michigan that first week, about what they're really made of. You know, Michigan probably has the top end speed for offensive and defensive players in the conference, but we'll see how the slow state fastest guys match up against SEC speed. You know, obviously that won't have any effect on how the Big Ten shakes out, but if Michigan's issues can be exposed at all, they're going to be exposed by Alabama. I just hope, MV, that we can keep the deficit against Michigan to under, say, 57 points this year. I'll feel an awful lot better about this program.
I'm pretty sure that we're not going to see a repeat of 58-0 again, but you know, don't quote me on that.
Can we stop the counter? Can we stop the counter?
Yeah, I believe we can stop the counter now. Breaking news from Bert Bielema Twitter propaganda feed. Also had so many questions about our QB situation that we want everyone to know that we are going with Danny O'Brien.
Yes!
As the starter for week one. So, yeah, the long-awaited national nightmare is over for Danny O'Brien. He's escaped the Edsall Ebola from Maryland, and he has landed the starting quarterback job at Wisconsin. Congrats,
well,
Brock.
That's exciting. Good for him. I hope that I'm not grossly wrong, and I'll eat my words later in the year. I don't believe that O'Brien is even in the same universe as Russell Wilson.
No.
You can look at their stats. You know, O'Brien is a good kid, but I think at the end of the day, he's upper end average. And you know, Wilson, I think, was out of this world. So just because they're doing the Lisa QB plan doesn't mean that it's going to produce the same results. Again, I'll happily eat my words if I'm wrong, and maybe this is just an optimistic Gopher fan hoping for the worst in Wisconsin. But you know, I think striking gold like they did with Wilson last year with another kid is pretty unlikely.
I completely agree with that. All right, let's move on to we're done with Michigan again. I think that Michigan, win standpoint, I think there are 9-10 wins. I mean, that's basically, you can pencil them in. They have talent across the board. They have some question marks. They may lose a couple games, you know, in the Big Ten. They'll probably have two losses. They may even have two losses before they even enter the Big Ten. So it's possible that they could win the Legends division by going 8-4 overall and 6-2 in the conference. But, you know, that as Hoke says, they're Michigan. They're Michigan. You know,
the Big Ten West is going to come down to that Michigan State game. I think the winner of that game wins the Big Ten West.
I completely agree with that. And let's move on to Michigan State. In terms of now, if there's one team that could probably best Michigan in terms of pure defensive talent, it's Michigan State.
Yep.
I mean, that is ferocious. I mean, the fact that you can even lose a guy like Jarrell Worthy, and you know, even a guy who is, you know, All-American, you know, in Greg Jones 2 years ago, and you could replace those guys, that level of talent, and still have arguably one of the two or three, maybe four best defenses in college football. I mean, that's just outstanding. I mean, they have just monsters all across the field at every position. They are loaded. They have talent. Really hats off to D'Antonio, as much as I don't like the guy. And we kind of rubbed it in his face Halloween 2009. They have an unbelievably good defense. They're going to be great this year, and they may even be better than last year.
Yeah, I agree. You look at a guy like Golston, and he just makes you want to pee yourself a little bit. I mean, I can't imagine having a lineup against him. It's going to be, yeah. I the thing that we moved the ball pretty well against Michigan State last year, and let's assume that they're going to be better. You know, I think that they can be exploited, but from a pure talent perspective and sort of the interesting system that Michigan State runs, yeah, I actually don't have hatred for D'Antonio. I think he's an okay guy. And I like Michigan State as a program, mostly because they stand in opposition to Michigan, who I hate as a program. So I like to sort of throw my weight behind who was, you know, little brother, as they say, in mm-hmm. Michigan State. So I don't have a full hate on for Michigan State. You know, I think that their ability to your point, to replace the talent that they've had is pretty unbelievable. And they've been very successful in recruiting and finding guys who fit their system and working them in there. I mean, they have a level of talent that I think I would kill for on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, they ain't no joke on the offensive side either. I think it'll be interesting to see how they can work a replacement for the quarterback position. But, I think there's a lot of upside with Michigan State this year.
I agree with that. Good thing you mentioned the offensive side of the ball. I think that they are going to go back to maybe like a Javon Ringer style offensive attack, because I just don't – I mean, I know that they speak and think very highly of Andrew Maxwell, and they brought him to Big Ten Media Day, so that's an indication that they view him as a program leader. But let's be honest here. Kirk Cousins was probably one of the most underrated and maybe underappreciated by people who just do a drive-by glance at the Big Ten in terms of star power. I mean, that guy won a lot of games and was incredibly successful and an integral part of their run the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to just be – it's one of those things where you're not just going to be able to replace him. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that would happen to Scott Tolzien. I mean, Bert Bielema was lucky enough that he was able to find Russell Wilson, because if they didn't have Wilson, they were looking at a huge drop-off from what they had from Tolzien. And of course, Russell Wilson came in and was even better than him. But, you know, getting back to Cousins and Maxwell, I mean, that's huge, huge shoes to fill. And I just don't know if he's going to be capable of doing that. And we'll see very on. I mean, they played Boise State preseason. And Boise, even though Boise State loses basically everything, I mean, one of the most successful college players in history, they're still Boise State even though I'm going to pull Brian Bennett here, they're still Boise State until proven otherwise. They're going to be a challenge. And I think that given the way that the personnel that they have, they're going to be just a pound, pound, pound rushing attack. They weren't that great of a rushing team last year, but they're going to rely upon Le'Veon Bell in that offensive line this season.
Yeah, they're going to be a defense-first rushing offense, I think is how you can characterize Michigan State, at least until the new guy has an opportunity to get his feet beneath him a little bit. But I think that Boise State game is going to be a good one. I think Michigan State is going to be fine because they have the horses to run the ball, because they have Le'Veon Bell, and that's how his name's always pronounced on TV, and I get a kick out of that. So I'm just going to say Le'Veon again. And I think their defense is going to be out of this world. So yeah, I think Michigan State's going to be right up there. The big question is the QB play, and can they get enough out of the new kid to make a run for the Big Ten West title?
Yeah, the only other team I could see making a run at it is Nebraska. And Nebraska, again, I think is another one of these teams that has a lot of question marks. They're going to be a rush first team. They have lots of talent. They have lost a lot on their offensive line, but they still have a quarterback, much like Michigan and us, that is predominantly a rushing threat that is looking to expand his accuracy as a passer. And apparently the reports out of Lincoln is that, you know, T-Mart has improved his throwing motion and is more accurate, but the proof will be in the pudding. Same thing.
Yeah,
same
I'll
thing
believe it when with, I see it.
Yeah, same thing with Gray. I mean, now, granted, Nebraska is a little bit even more interesting than, you know, some of the other teams, because I think they came in overconfident that their system would work, that the Bo Pelini defense that really dominated and suffocated, you know, Big 12 offenses was going to come in and just dominate Big 10 offenses. But what I don't think he quite anticipated was that every team in the Big 10 could put up points on his defense. And that they were just really shocked by how much they were pushed around by teams like Michigan State, Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, even Northwestern, Ohio State. I mean, they I think it was an eye opener for them. Really, really do.
Yeah, I do. I do too. You know, I think they, you know, the Big 12 is so full of spread teams, and the ability for, you know, you've got to construct your defense to stop the spread, and you don't have as many hard, big defenses that you have in the Big 10, who have historically been more aligned to a power run game, right? So I think, you know, taking the game from the Big 12, where their style of play matched up pretty well against the defenses that were aligned more to stop a true spread attack. You know, I think finding the larger, more physical defenses in the Big 10 was you know, certainly may have changed the way that Pelini is going to be approaching offense in the future. With that said, with Burkhead, you know, they're going to do what they did last year. To your point, they do lose some on the offensive line, but I think they're pretty well put together. I'm not a big fan of Martinez. I don't think that there's, you know, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of big fans of Martinez. It surprises me that he hasn't been pushed harder to retain that position. He's got a noodle for an arm, and if you were to rate Robinson, Gray, and Martinez, I'd put Martinez at a distant third, and I'd put Gray a distant second to Robinson as well, for what it's worth. But I just don't think he has the capacity to do a lot. You know, that Nebraska would need to really challenge Michigan or Michigan State for the Big Ten West championship.
Yeah, and another thing too is that, you know, I think part of the problem that they had last year was that they actually lost quite a bit of personnel on the defense. They lost a lot of star power, not only from, you know, the obvious Ndamukong Suh, but, you know, losing Prince Amukamara was kind of a big blow heading into the 2011 season. And while, you know, Kennard, however you pronounce it, was supposed to be the next guy, he ended up being injured at the beginning of the season. And then, of course, when you lose, you know, now I'm blanking. I always have names and then I blank. A big defensive tackle, whatever. Who cares? No,
not prep work.
I don't do prep work. I'm not all about that. But anyway, so I mean, they lost quite a bit, and I think that was a shock. I mean, even the fact that they had to bulk up, they were trying to bulk up their linebackers a little bit preseason was an indication that there might have been some transitionary problems that they had. I think they'll be better off this year, but again, do they have enough combined talent on offense and defense to challenge teams that are going to be very similar to them, style-wise and structure-wise, in terms of where their talent lies in Michigan and Michigan State? I mean, just that remains to be seen.
Can they win with Martinez as a quarterback? I mean, can they beat a Michigan? Can they beat a Michigan State?
This awkward silence probably means no.
Okay.
I just don't see the dynamism with Martinez that I do with Robinson. I know that they have some pretty good talent at wide receiver because Nebraska has recruited really well. I mean, they are good. They do recruit really well for their system. But it's all a matter of whether or not their defense is going to be better than Michigan State or Michigan's going into those games, and whether or not their defense can stop a running quarterback like Martinez or like Denard Robinson. And I just don't think they can. And this, at the same time, can their offense, being as one-dimensional as it is, run the ball up and down on Michigan State or Michigan? I know they're not going to be able to do it against Michigan State. But can they do it against Michigan's front? I don't know. But they're not going to be able to complete any passes against those two teams for sure.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be those three games, that triage of games is basically going to be a, you know, down and out slugfest, and I think the team that emerges from that with only one loss is going to win the division. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
You know, now that we've spent way too much time talking about hated rivals and the top half of the Big Ten, if you will, let's do some drive-bys on some other teams and probably do some hot sprot takes. Not along the lines of Brian Bennett, because I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't paid a lick of attention to what's going down at Northwestern or Purdue. Really haven't.
But MV Purdue is the dark horse to win the Big Ten this year. Haven't you heard?
Yeah. I saw a tweet from from Dave Revson saying, you know, coming out of Purdue practice, oh, this is a good team. And I thought, really? Is this a joke?
This thing, seriously, that is getting so much play that Purdue is the team. This is the year for Purdue. This is the year that Danny Hope has been working toward, and Purdue is a legitimate contender to top Wisconsin in the Big Ten East.
When I read comments like there are no glaring weaknesses on this team, I know that certain writers have jumped the shark in terms of feeding into this Purdue as a dark horse contender complex or construct that's being built. And I'm sorry, but until further notice, Purdue is Purdue. They still have a quarterback that's really not all that good, and neither of their other two quarterbacks that they have that are basically at the same level.
MV, best quarterbacks in the Big Ten.
What?
Sprott's takes.
Based upon what? I mean, I'm sorry, but Purdue, until proven otherwise, is Purdue. I mean, you know, Turbush is okay, but Marv is only okay. And their other quarterback, whose name escapes me because he last played, what, 2-3 years ago, is only okay too.
And who do they have? Henry. He's just a short little fast guy.
And who do they have at running back?
Ralph Bolden, presuming Bolden? His legs can stay in shape.
Bolden, a guy who
I think they've got Shavers and some other guy I don't know.
Again, guys that aren't really all that good, and they're not distinguishable. And the same thing with their receiving core. And the same thing with their offensive line. The same thing with their linebackers. The one position that which you can say that Purdue really has a bunch of standouts is defensive line. But other than that, I don't see where this hype for Purdue is coming from.
Yeah, I like their secondary because they got Ricardo Allen and Josh Johnson back there, who I think are pretty good. You know, they're probably top half of the Big Ten, at least Ricardo Allen is. But no, I don't get it. You know, and again, I'm not a Purdue expert. I didn't spend any time looking into Purdue to try and learn more to educate myself for this. I figured we'd maybe spend 3 minutes talking about Purdue and mocking their aspirations to win the Big Ten and go to the Rose Bowl this year. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. It's Purdue is Purdue. They don't even really exist. And Danny effing Hope is their coach. And come on. I mean, yeah. He's got facial hair, and that's about all he's got going for him.
Danny Hope did such a stellar job at Eastern Kentucky that he really warranted the making the leap from, FCS awesome head coach to Big Ten offensive line, offensive coordinator coach, and then leading a complete dark horse Purdue team to the Big Ten title within year four. Except he had a really undistinguished career at Eastern Kentucky, and it's kind of a mystery as to how he was even hired as the heir apparent to Joe Tiller in the first place. I just don't get it. I'm with you. I don't think Hope is one of these coaches that I suspect is probably going to be out of the league in 2 or 3 years.
That's what I think, too.
Let alone a guy who is the dark horse contender to win the division. I mean, that's the same thing as saying Tim Brewster was a dark horse contender to win the big, to win a division, or to win the conference back in 2008. I mean, it's just absurd. The guy, okay, granted, that was hyperbole there, that preposterous statement. Danny Hope is not as bad as Tim Brewster, but he's not a phenomenal coach. He's not a guy that inspires confidence to say, you know what, just looking at that guy's going to win the Big Ten one of these years.
Yeah, I think they get a lot of mileage out of beating OSU 2 years in a row, right? I think they get a lot of mileage of not losing any real significant players to graduation or attrition last year, and that they don't have any glaring weaknesses, right? So they're just okay. They've got the same system in place. We've got a team that is the second worst team in the conference, for the last couple of years. So I'm not in a real high and mighty position to throw stones, but stop it with the Purdue is going to win the Big Ten this year.
You know, another team that I think isn't going to be nearly as good, and I think I don't know why people aren't talking about it a little bit more, is Tim Beckman in Illinois. Now I know that Ron Zook was perennially an underachiever, and they have an incredible amount of talent along that defense and on offense for that matter, but they can never really overcome the Zookinator and getting zooked constantly. But let's think about Tim Beckman at Toledo. This is a guy who is supposed to be a defensive genius, and yet every single year at Toledo, it was hot, hot Maxion to the 10th degree.
Love you, Maxion.
Maxion is the great American pastime. It is up there with bourbon and apple pie, some of the greatest things about this country. But again, this is an offensive football on turf, or not football on turf. Football is obviously played on turf. Basketball on turf, points, 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 blow up the scoreboard type conference. And
I throw away my entire porn collection when Maxion starts. So every Thursday and Friday night, I dump my entire porn collection because I get everything I need. I'm totally satisfied with Maxion.
Oh, yeah. It is the equivalent to football masturbation. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But moving beyond these ludicrous and lewd conversations that we are having, you know, Beckman is a defensive guy, and yet his defense sucked at Toledo. Toledo's offense, which was actually really, really good, stayed in Toledo. So are we supposed to believe that a guy who was a defensive-minded coach but couldn't coach defense at his last stop is going to inherit a team that really underachieved across the board and didn't bring his offensive talent, and they struggled in offense last year and somehow going to make it better? That's the big question. I don't think they can. Plain and simple.
Yeah, well, you're not losing some fairly insignificant players at Illinois. You're losing, you know, dudes that were drafted, right? So you lose Whitney Mercilus, who had, what, about 2,000 sacks last year? I mean, the guy was all over the place. You lose A.J. Jenkins at the wide receiver spot. So, you know, again, it's college. You're going to cycle guys through. You're going to get guys in. But, you know, Mercilus had, you know, 15 sacks or something like that.
Some absurd amount.
What's that?
Some absurd amount. Like 17 sacks.
And Jenkins had 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns or something along those lines. Those are not easy numbers to just replace, right? So he's walking into a situation. He's a defensive guy. You know, and Illinois is one of those cases where you can't look at the recruits and say what kind of a team you're going to have. There's certainly talent there, but I think Shiohas is a good quarterback. I don't have a lot of bad things to say about him, but I don't know, you know, that Gopher game last year where we won 27-7, that was just a lot of fun to watch. I don't know that Illinois was totally engaged in that game. I think that there was a pretty strong amount of quit before they even walked in there. But at the same time, they didn't look significantly faster than us. They didn't look significantly more athletic than us. And if you accept the notion that we are a team that has less talent than others in the Big Ten, which I sometimes agree with, sometimes don't agree with, the type of recruits that Zucker was bringing in should be significantly more athletic, significantly stronger, significantly faster than we are. And I just didn't see it last year. So, you know, having, you know, losing some real key parts of that, I don't see how Illinois is going to be a legitimate contender this year. Again, because they're in the division that only has four teams that are eligible to win, you're getting a lot of talk is this is the year something magical is going to happen. Beckman's going to come in and turn everything around. I don't think they have the offensive horses, and I think they've lost an awful lot on defense. It's going to make it very, very difficult for them to be contenders this year.
You know, moving up the interstate to the forced rivalry that Beckman is trying to start with Northwestern. Again, Northwestern is Northwestern until proven otherwise. This is going to be a team again that can't stop anybody on defense, because only one Northwestern team in like the last decade has had a good defense, and that came in 2008. And on offense, can they run the ball? Probably not. But are they going to have this magical run of another awesome quarterback that's going to put up probably 70% completion and throw for like 2,500 yards? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're being cliched here, and we're going to probably sound the cliche sounder about 1,000 times for that one, but they're Northwestern. They are Northwestern until proven otherwise.
Well, the stats bear it out. From the time that Colder got last year, he was in the 67% completion percentage, so there's no reason why that's going to fundamentally change. It might be a little bit lower, it might be a little bit higher, but it's going to be within that 70% range. He's going to throw for more touchdowns than he does interceptions at a pretty good clip. And they're going to have some running back that you've probably never heard of who is just okay. And they're going to have a defense that, you know, it's going to be average at best. I mean, that's Northwestern's MO. I love Northwestern. Northwestern is my favorite Big Ten team outside of the Gophers. I like to beat Northwestern, but I like Northwestern to win the rest of the time. But, you know, from everything I've seen on their team, they're pretty unremarkable.
Yeah. Again, they're like a Purdue. That's not even fair to say. They're not Purdue light. Purdue has more talent on defense than Northwestern does.
Yep.
And Northwestern is probably going to suck the high teat on defense again. And
yep.
You know, but they're going to beat teams they shouldn't, like Iowa, because they always beat Iowa. And they're probably going to, you know, they're going to win another 6-7 games and get to a bowl, because that's what Fitz does. Fitz gets lauded for how awesome of a coach he is because the expectations at Northwestern are ridiculously low. He's not even I wouldn't even call him as good as the last two Northwestern coaches are, but, you know, because they're consistently a fringe bowl team, he gets nobbed as being the greatest coach ever.
Yep. Yeah. And again, more power to him. He does an awful lot with Northwestern that, you know, considering the disadvantages that they have, you know, he does a fine job there. But defensively this year, I think they're going to get eviscerated. They may not be starting more than two or three seniors this year on defense, and that's not a good place to be.
Now, wrapping it all up, can we do haikus for both Indiana and Penn State? Is that the extent to which we could probably limit our analysis of them? Indiana is going to be a dumpster fire. They'll probably have a bigger bounce in terms of wins because, you know, it's not hard to rebound from one loss, but this team still doesn't have anywhere near the amount of talent that's needed to win, you know, even what is a unbelievably weak division in the Big Ten East. And Penn State, I mean, well, what more can you say about that team? At what point do those guys just say, you know what, man, I just need to get this year over with and graduate? I know pride is going to play a significant part of this, but how much is pride going to carry you through the season when you know at the end that it's meaningless? You're not going to a bowl. You're not avenging any legacy because the legacy is already tarnished, and you're not playing for anything. There, I said it.
Yeah, so I quickly put together a Penn State haiku. So it's just, oh God, why, decimated for 10 years, all of the bourbon. So, you know, I think that, you know, I feel bad for all the Penn State bros out there. You know, I was never a big fan. I kind of thought their fans were dinks in the interactions I've had with them. But, man, to have that happen to your program is just awful. You know, so suffice it to say they're going to come here in 2013, and, you know, we may be able to hang a 40 spot on them. But I'm glad we don't play them this year. We don't have to think about them too much. I do wish we played Indiana. I mean, they're our brothers at the hind teat. And, you know, when your one win last year came against an FCS team and you got absolutely murdered basically by everyone that you played, you know, it's got to be tough to be an Indiana fan. But we did hear that, damn it, MV, they sell out their student section because they're just – admit winning doesn't matter at Indiana. It's just about having fun. And so we're not even as good as Indiana in that. So that was pleasant to read this week.
Yeah, I love that narrative. I also love that the Star Tribune guy, whoever he was, I'd never heard of him before, that they trot out to write this story because apparently there wasn't enough negativity surrounding the Gophers for this cycle. Forgot to mention that the number one, the likely number preseason number one basketball team in the country is going to be Indiana. And then in order to buy your student tickets for the basketball season, you also need to buy them for football. And I also remember hearing something about how Indiana has really awesome tailgating for students outside their stadium, and that none of them actually leave the tailgate lots.
Yeah, I probably rip on Marcus Fuller as much as anyone does, though to his credit, he hasn't blocked me on Twitter like Glenn Mason did. And again, all I was doing with Glenn Mason was I was just mocking him for constantly retweeting every nice thing that somebody said about him. That was all I did, and now I'm blocked. because I guess I say two mean things, but hubris is that guy's specialty. Anyway, I rip on Marcus Fuller more than just about anyone, but he did a great job coming out with a counterpoint to the Strib piece with some of the actual, you know, facts about what went into it and why Indiana's attendance was higher than ours, and that maybe it wasn't quite as clear cut as the Strib piece made it out to be. But anyway, it's all water under the bridge. Indiana is gonna suck horrifically. I did read somewhere though that there is optimism within the program that they can win the Big Ten Eastern Division and represent that division in the Big Ten Championship game. And this is their one chance to do it. And I 11 Warriors had a great piece about why Ohio State fans should cheer on Indiana. Yeah. So if for those of you who haven't had a chance to read it, go to 11 Warriors. It's a great site. And that piece on why they should be cheering on Indiana this year was absolutely fantastic.
Yes, that piece is from the great Ramzi Nasrallah, a fellow situational bourbon aficionado and fantastic writer over at 11 Warriors and doing awesome Ohio State content. I haven't actually brought up Ohio State, but, you know, let's see here. My analysis of them is going to be Urban Meyer and Braxton Miller. Done.
Yep. That's about where I come into. You know, and they're probably not going to be great this year, but they will be great probably starting next year. And I'm very, very glad that we're not in the same division as them, because I think as good as Michigan can be in the future, I don't think Brady Hoke is Urban Meyer, and Urban Meyer scares the piss out of me. So, that's about all I have to say about Ohio State as well.
All right, so final Sprotts takes here. Who wins each division, and who goes to the Rose Bowl?
I think it's going to be Michigan and Wisconsin, and I think Michigan goes to the Rose Bowl.
I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I'm probably going to go along those lines too. I'm going to pick Michigan. I just think that they have enough, that they have more on offense than either Michigan State or Nebraska does, and they can compete defensively with those two teams, that they're going to be able to win. It could be a scenario in which they win the conference, going 8-4 overall, by just absolutely getting their ish pushed in by Alabama, and then also losing to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Wisconsin could be 8-4 and then go to the Big Ten title too. I mean, we could literally have one of those type of years in the Big Ten. And I think Michigan is going to go to the Rose Bowl and then probably get murdered by Oregon or USC.
It's always fun to watch, though. It's always fun to watch the Pac-10 just absolutely take us from the behind without even a reach around for politeness.
Yeah, a real dry one, so to speak.
In any chance at all that Wisconsin has a magical run to the national championship this year?
Wisconsin and national championship do not even belong in the same sentence. As I've joked about many a time here, it's important for us Gopher fans to remember, even in our misery that has been the last 2 years and 40 years of sucktitude, that we found a spare national championship just laying around that we didn't even know about. We dusted it off, and we can claim it officially. And yet Wisconsin has never won a national championship, and Iowa has won.
Again. Yeah, that's a good point. It would be I know I'd sleep a lot better at night if we could have just a nice run to the Rose Bowl sometime in my lifetime, though.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Sort of like it's the Cubs fan mentality in me that yeah. I always think better luck next year or until next year. You know, next year's going to be the year. Now, this is speaking really optimistically here, and this may be a preposterous statement, but I actually think the Gophers are in a better position or have a better shot of going to the Rose Bowl and actually winning it than the Cubs do of winning a World Series anytime in the next 5 years.
Okay. I hope you're right. I think we're headed in the right direction. How far we'll get heading in that direction, I think, remains to be seen. But I like us better now than I did, say, 2 years ago.
Completely agree with that 100%. All right, that wraps up the podcast for this week. Join us next week when Frothy and I prepare for the abomination that is going to be Las Vegas Heat, debauchery that occurs on the Strip, and what to do if the Gophers manage to lose to the UNLV Running Rebels.
It's game week!
Game week is upon us. All right, until next time, see you later, folks.